going on here?
Let's face it, this is not the worst thing you've caught me doing.
The Force is with you, young Skywalker. But you are not a Jedi yet.
You are a vain, greedy, cruel boy.
You are an old man and a fool!
You're unworthy!
The dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Hey! Take those headphones off right now!
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Anybody care about what I want?
I do.
Shut up. Get out.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
Got a bad feeling about this.
This drink, I like it. Another!
No. I am your father.
Guys,
I'm bringing the party to you.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Hey guys, and welcome to WDWNT Nerd Alert. I'm your host, Joe Hogarty, and the only one who's hanging out with me tonight is Eric. Eric Lancey.
Hey everybody.
So on tonight's show, since it's the last show before we see Star Wars The Last Jedi, we're going to discuss The Last Jedi and what we'd like to see and what we don't want to see. But we're also going to do our annual Star Wars Bingo segment where I'll provide, I guess me and Eric, I'll participate on this one too, some potential scenarios that could or could not happen in the movie. The one who gets the most right after we see this movie wins, so I have a pretty good chance since it's just me and Eric. Eric's odds are pretty good too.
Yeah, probably close to 50-50.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so before we get into that, let's get into some news. And first big news that happened last week was the Avengers Infinity War trailer came out.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people to see if we could become something more. So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
So desperately that you're right, yet to fail all the same. Dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses and get this man a shield.
Fun isn't something one considers when balancing the universe. But this does put a smile on my face.
So, what do you think, Eric? Did it live up to the hype?
I think it exceeded the hype for me. I believe that the Russo brothers were tweeting the number 3 in sort of an ambiguous way. as to whether or not something may be released in 3 days, on December 3rd, in 3 weeks. And it just seemed like they were going to release this trailer ahead of The Last Jedi. And we sort of got to see this pirated, I guess, cell phone video if you weren't at the D23 event over the summer. And there was a lot of audio from it produced. And so we had an idea of what we may see from the trailer. And what I loved about this first and foremost was it was not the same trailer as what was given to the spectators at the D23 event. It's going to be jam-packed with characters. We knew it had to be, but I loved sort of every note that it hit. And what I loved first and foremost, we've sort of railed against the music selection in trailers that have been released recently. And in this film, I love that they just go to the Avengers suite and nothing but that from the original film. I love the voiceover of Nick Fury's monologue from the first Avengers of "There Was an Idea." And you have the different actors voicing over Nick Fury's speech. I loved every bit of this. And to me, this is what has separated the MCU from Warner Brothers. Even in their trailer, the style of their trailer has just been picture perfect. And if I wasn't excited before to see this, I can't describe it, because I think I've watched the trailer at least a dozen times to this point, and each time hoping to maybe see something a little new that I didn't see the time before, but I loved it.
Yeah, my only disappointment was I did get to see that pirated video, and so I kind of knew what was coming in a way. There was some stuff that was in that video that was also on the teaser trailer, but I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty damn awesome.
You know who was missing?
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye was not in the trailer.
Yeah.
And I thought that was crazy. He's not a central figure. He's not Tony Stark. He's not Steve Rogers. But he is in the MCU. He's an original Avenger. And there was nothing of him in the trailer. And I would imagine he's going to have somewhat of a substantial or meaty role in the film. So my hope is that that's not sort of foreshadowing what's going to happen to the Hawkeye character. Because while I don't necessarily want to see a Hawkeye solo film, I love him as an ensemble member in the Avengers films. Now, the one thing, let me ask you, and this is something we haven't discussed, how did you think Thanos looked?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that, too.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, but I was going to ask you that question next. But I'm glad you brought it up. I thought he looked pretty good. I guess I still like him with his armor on, like his helmet, if you want to call it that. But, I mean, when you compare him to, say, I'll say more to Doomsday, I mean, he looks like a real person. And I was pretty impressed with what I saw. I'm still not sure. I mean, is he fully CGI? Because I know Josh Brolin, is he just doing motion capture? Or
you know? I believe he is, because I believe there were some still shots that have been published of he and Mark Ruffalo working the motion capture animation. So I believe that he is going to be more CGI and will be Josh Brolin worked, I believe, almost exclusively in the motion capture animation. And I thought of the same thing, too, as you, about him missing the armor. And then I started to think about the Captain America Civil War trailer that introduced Spider-Man, and I felt that Spider-Man did not look great in that trailer. And if you see or have seen in Civil War what the finished product looked like, looks so much better than what the trailer did. So I don't know that we've seen the finished product. And that actually makes me excited to think that maybe we didn't, because as he's stepping through what looks to be a portal, he looks more CGI until he fully exits the portal. And then I believe he starts to look, he starts to have a better look. And while I thought he looked great, you can definitely see Josh Brolin in that character. And I loved that. I really did. I thought that he looked fantastic.
Yeah, I thought he looked great. I mean, I was really surprised at how good he looked. But like you said, I'm sure they're going to still do some tweaking on him, and he's going to look even better by the time we actually see the final product. But yeah, I'm pretty impressed so far what I've seen. What about the romance between Vision and Scarlet Witch? They're definitely hinting on that. You like that or not?
I absolutely do. I think it's one of those nods to the comic books. And one of the things that the Marvel comics have always done is they've always had these romantic relationships with their characters. So to see that, and I know that you are not a fan of the Hulk Black Widow romance in Age of Ultron, it really had no ill effect in my mind, but to see Scarlet Witch and Vision in this film, it actually feels quite natural to me to see it. So I am looking forward to it because I believe there will be gravity in this film. And when you see people with close relationships, when there are those grave or dire moments, it's supposed to have that tugging of the heartstrings kind of impact on the viewer, and I think that it will be handled really well.
See, I loved Vision in Age of Ultron. I thought he was the best part of that movie to come out of it. And I think in Civil War, what kind of bothered me a little bit about him is that he wanted to fit in. And to me, the Vision in the comic books, well, when I was reading it years and years ago, decades ago, he didn't give a damn. I mean, he just was who he was. I mean, he can care less if anyone liked him or anything like that. He was kind of like Mr. Spock. You know, he was very intelligent, very powerful. And I think that's why the Scarlet Witch was attracted to him, because he just was so different. And I guess I don't like that he's getting a little soft in these movies. Like, wasn't he cooking her spaghetti or something like that, or one of her Russian dishes? And
yes,
just,
and I don't think that is sort of a throwaway. The scene, I think it's very valid, the scene in Civil War where he is cooking for her, it is sort of a central plot point that because of his feelings that he doesn't realize that he's capable of having for her, he almost kills Rhodey. And that's a really important plot point in Civil War, is his human feelings for her, even though he's not a human. I think that only carries on and maybe grows more in Infinity War.
Yeah, and I guess we really don't know what this Vision is like. I think he's different than he was in the comic books. I mean, first of all, he's got the Soul Stone. Is that what's on his head?
No, he has not the Soul Stone. He has
reality?
The Soul Stone has not been found yet.
Okay.
He has the Mind Stone.
Okay, the Mind Stone.
It's the Mind Stone.
So yeah, I mean, there could be something about that. It's just something we're not going to understand, that it might actually create life, and he's not necessarily an android, but he is a step in between maybe an android and a human, and that's how he can fall in love and feel and stuff like that. So I just,
as could have been the reason, if you remember in Age of Ultron, when they're talking about the cradle, they're talking about it bonding to human cells, mm-hmm. that the proteins that they were using, that the materials that they were using to create life, and they really give an explanation as they're repairing the injury to Hawkeye. There, Dr. Cho is giving the explanation as to that it's the materials that she is using, they are bonding with human cells. And so it makes me wonder if when Vision is created in the cradle, if there aren't human qualities. But I don't think that that necessarily means that in the one scene it looks as though you – it doesn't look – Paul Bettany is absolutely in human form. I don't know that that necessarily means that he's going to become a human in the film. That could be a dream sequence. That could be a vision. It could be anything. I don't think it necessarily means that he's just going to take on a pure human form.
Well, I notice he still has the stone on.
So. Yes.
Yeah, that does make me think that it could be a dream, or maybe he's able to phase out into a human form. Like he evolves or something like that.
And there has to be something about his sort of biomolecular structure, because in Civil War, he's able to walk through walls. And he is in the comics as well. He is able to transport himself through Ant-Man. So he has this ability, and maybe his abilities, I don't know if I want to say shapeshift, but he might be able to do things beyond what we've seen so far. And he, I guess, maybe is learning how to do these things.
What else was I going to say? Oh, did you see that picture recently of Mark Ruffalo on the set? And he's being held by a giant gray hand? By the
Yes.
So what do you think about that one?
I don't know if, because I just read something where really Mark Ruffalo, since Marvel cannot use Hulk in any film title, and Mark Ruffalo cannot star as a cannot be in a standalone Hulk film, that he's really being given this incredible arc in three films, starting with Thor Ragnarok, then in Infinity War, and then I don't know that it really described what the third film was going to be, but I don't know if that might be was it the Abomination in the first?
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
So I don't know if it's sort of a callback to that. I don't know if it's maybe trying to throw you off that it's a gray hand and isn't actually supposed to be a red hand, and it's the Red Hulk. It could be so many different things.
Could be. Yeah.
And at this point, I really try to almost ignore what Mark Ruffalo is doing on social media, only because even if it's sort of Marvel sponsored, because it almost seems like that's sort of his mission, and even Tom Holland's mission is to be the, oops, we spoiled something and we didn't mean to, yet we really sort of did in this passive aggressive sort of way. So I almost try not to think too much into what he's doing, because I think that he's almost sort of self-promoting or going like into business for himself.
Well, what I would like, what a lot of people have been saying, is that maybe it is the Grey Hulk, and maybe in this movie we'll see that the Hulk and Banner separate, and they're two different entities. And, I think I've been dying to see the Grey Hulk. He was supposed to be an Ultron, but
right.
We decided to change him, I think, at the last minute. But I think that would be pretty awesome if they were able to separate. Although it doesn't make sense in this whole thing with Infinity War, because they're really going to need Hulk. And also we saw him green in the trailer, too.
Yeah. Well, but that doesn't mean that he's not separated, and then I guess sort of, I don't know how you would say, sort of put back together. I think that it could be that, because he kept sort of emphasizing in Ragnarok that he was afraid that the next time he would become the Hulk, he would never be able to be Bruce Banner again. So it makes me wonder if that isn't somewhat of a foreshadowing, or sort of telling what's going to happen, that there is going to be a Hulk that can't become Bruce Banner again, and maybe it is the Grey Hulk. I don't know.
What was your favorite part, would you say, in that trailer?
So it's a very subtle part that I think I watched the trailer maybe five or six times before I saw it, and it's a callback I try not to be a topper or sort of the guy that just loves the stars more than anything, but I love the relationship that Tony Stark and Steve Rogers have. And it really almost like you would see in a film where one friend loses another friend to death or something. I sort of felt that way at the end of Civil War, and then Tony Stark is back at the compound and gets the package from Steve Rogers. And in the first few shots of the Infinity War trailer, after they show Banner in the Sanctum Sanctorum, there is a shot of Robert Downey Jr. sort of turning, looking over his shoulder, and he is holding the cell phone that Cap gave to him. And he, in the letter, it says, "If you need me, you can call me, or you know where to find me." And if you look, Tony is holding that phone. And so it makes me believe that you probably, I would think maybe even for the first act, may not see Steve Rogers at all. I loved that. And a very close second is that T'Challa saying, "Get that man a shield." And it made me think of during the Civil War comic series, when Steve was fighting the government and gave up the shield, it was T'Challa that crafted a new shield for him. And I love that, because that's Marvel. The MCU doesn't always follow the comics purely, but every once in a while they sort of hit this sweet spot of where they just follow a key storyline, not to a T, but enough that it resonates. And that just, those two parts for me, I just absolutely loved. I thought they were fantastic.
Yeah, I'm going to say something just because it excited me when I saw it. I loved seeing Spider-Man in his new costume. I know I'm against tech Spider-Man and all that, but it's okay in this movie, though, because he's kind of like the Iron Spider. But it just looks so damn true. Cool.
It's true to him as an Avenger.
Yes, yes.
For me, when I say, and this was something we saw in the trailer from the D23 event, when he realizes and he feels his spider sense, and you see it. And I love that it's a physical reaction that you see, and not sort of this musical note like we saw in the Tobey Maguire films. Because I don't know if you really ever saw in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man films, if you really ever saw him with his spider sense tingling. I don't remember ever seeing that. And so I understand in Spider-Man Homecoming, he just doesn't realize that's what it is. But in this film, it is in full force, and you see the physical reaction. I thought that was outstanding.
Well, that's coming out, May 4th.
May 4th. And it's trying to take over Star Wars Day, and this year we'll forgive it. That'll work.
Yeah, just once. But yeah, we're definitely looking forward to it, and it'll be here before you know it, which is great. All right, so you've been hearing about this Fox and Disney thing going on, right, Eric?
I have.
What do you think about it?
I, as a fan of the MCU, I think it helps so much, and I think it hurts so much. I think it helps so much in that we might finally see a telling of the Fantastic Four that we would love.
Yeah, yeah.
And we might finally see, there was a time where Bryan Singer was a genius for his interpretation of the X-Men, and then Bryan Singer believed that he was the genius that created the X-Men. And the X-Men, I feel that franchise has so lost its way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love the idea of having those stories told in a really good way. The way that Marvel, the MCU, has been able to tell those stories. My fear is, we look at Infinity War and we look at all of the characters that they're going to try to put in a 2 to 2.5 hour film. Now add the Fantastic Four, add the X-Men, add all of these other characters that you possibly could have, and it doesn't even feel or seem realistic. But at the same time, I don't know how you tell the story of the Avengers without Reed Richards. How do you tell it? How do you tell, or how do you tell the story of Marvel without all of these characters? Hank Pym and Reed Richards and Tony Stark all have these relationships together. And so we don't have any of that right now. There have been battles, the Wolverine and the Hulk. Hugh Jackman has said the only way he would come back to portray the Wolverine is to be in an Avengers film. And that seems not just possible, it seems likely. When talks had stalled a week or so ago, there's a report just today that Fox, that the Murdoch family loves what Disney is presenting over everybody else. And if Disney purchases the amount of the Fox properties that has been indicated, that Disney may then have, I believe, 39% control of the entire Fox empire, and essentially the controlling vote in everything that happens. There are all sorts of legal things that could happen, antitrust, regulatory sorts of things, but as just a fan of these characters, I would love to see it, because I would love to see, you don't have to have Avenger style films, you could have these sort of just sort of sections of characters together and then standalones. But the timing is sort of perfect, because especially listening to Kevin Feige, there's going to be somewhat of an end with Infinity War, and then whatever Avengers 4 is, that's going to be sort of an end for some and a beginning for others. And so it makes me wonder, could that beginning of others be some of these other characters? I mean, look at what's not happening with Planet Hulk and the Incredible Hulk character, because of what they are not allowed to do. By having this partnership with Fox, that in my mind almost begins to really force the hand of NBC Universal and Comcast. And at that point, I don't know that they will have the leverage to stop Disney and Marvel in just acquiring all of the properties.
Well, right now, I know Comcast and Verizon are also in the mix. They're looking to buy Fox too. But it sounds like to me, I think when it first came out, Fox was the one that approached Disney first. And then the talks fell apart, you know, probably over money and stuff like that. But now it seems like they're talking again. And like you said, the last thing that we heard, this is, I think, the third bit of news that we've heard, like, in the last couple of weeks. It sounds fairly likely that something's going to happen. And we should probably get an announcement within the next couple of weeks, probably before the end of the year. But I think that would just be incredible. I mean, to see the Fantastic Four, and I think we've mentioned this too, the best Fantastic Four movie that's been out there has been The Incredibles. And now that we actually, if we do get the Fantastic Four, we can tell a more accurate story, a better story, a fun story. Not everything has to be dark after The Dark Knight, and it would just be something else if we got the Fantastic Four. And I know you're looking forward to possibly a Wolverine-Hulk fight. I'm looking forward to a Thing-Hulk fight. And I would love to see something like that. And I think we could see like an Avengers versus Fantastic Four movie down the road. And that just excites me. That they're coming back to Marvel, and Marvel knows what they do to do with the characters. I mean, that's going to be incredible. And if that does happen, we only need one more, you know.
And like I said, I think that will almost force Universal's hand. Universal never has to give it up, but at the same time, I begin to wonder how much, because I believe Universal's position is they're keeping the characters because it really helps in their theme parks. And at a certain point, what can the Disney company do to say to Universal, this is so much money, you can't say no? And I have always thought that might ultimately be the case, but I'm beginning to think more and more if this happens, it's almost an avalanche that you can't stop.
Well, I was actually talking about Spider-Man. That's the last
one
that they have to get in there. But I understand what you're saying with the theme parks. Yeah, it's it's so scattered, which is like it just drives you nuts and everything, knowing that they still don't have everything under their control, but they're slowly but surely pulling them in. Like when they got Daredevil back, they got the Punisher back. Slowly but surely, they're picking up these pieces that people that tried to make something profitable out of these characters weren't able to do. And they were able to bring out a movie, The Guardians of the Galaxy, a know-nothing superhero team, and just turn it into like one of the most amazing movies that Marvel has under its belt. So just think what they can do with the Fantastic Four. I mean, and I would love if... what is his name that directed Guardians of the Galaxy? I'm having like...
James Gunn.
Yeah, I mean, if he took control of that, I mean, I think it would be incredible.
Disney also did the same thing with Big Hero 6. That's a Marvel property that they made into an animated film that people loved. Yeah. And it is. I believe they have the knowledge and just sort of the creative... the creative structure, whatever it is, they just know how to treat this. And I think that it really, as much as Disney, I guess, is a part of it as the production company, it's really Kevin Feige's vision that has done this. It really is. And he has just been outstanding. But to think this all started because Marvel was going bankrupt. Yeah. This all happened because Marvel, there was almost nothing left of Marvel, and now look at it.
All right, so can we talk about Mark Hamill a little bit? I think you know like how I feel about Mark Hamill, and I think you're starting to feel that way
too. If we must, yes.
So he's always in the news. I think he loves being in the news, and you know, now that he's got fame again with the new Star Wars franchise with The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi... But this guy needs to just shut up and just act. And no one wants to hear what he has to say. I had told you this story here. He was on Twitter and he said that he was upset about a scene in The Empire Strikes Back. So this is from Mark's Twitter account. And he says, actually, he's talking about the scene where he's hanging upside down in the Wampus Cave. So he says, when filming this scene, I was assured by lightsaber swipe towards camera, created not on set, with simply singed fur just to scare him off. I was horrified to later see amputation and unnecessary cruelty towards the Wampa. He was hungry. He's not evil. Luke would never do this. And this isn't the first time he said this, so he is being serious about this, because I have something else that he said this week, too, which is even more bizarre. But anyway, so what do you think about this whole Wampa crap?
Well... First of all, I have a few issues with this. My first issue is, if he wasn't in a car accident, that scene doesn't need to be written. So don't be injured in between films, and then that doesn't have to happen. I think it's silly that he says that, but why was he not upset that Harrison Ford cuts open a TomTom so that he can stay warm? Why is that okay? Yeah, it's bizarre. And the fact that we're actually discussing this like this almost makes it sound like we're taking this seriously. And it just is almost, I feel like he's saying these things just to stay in the public conscious. I can't think of a logical reason that he would say these things, because it just sounds silly. It sounds bizarre. I was told that only fur would be singed. It's bizarre on a level that I can't even begin to describe or understand.
Well, I think the problem is it's like social media and the way things are today. Everyone thinks they have a voice, you know, and everybody wants to hear what they have to say.
or that every time an idea pops into their mind, that the entire world needs to know about it.
Exactly. It just, yeah, I'm sure he has like millions of followers, and he needs to say something every day, and he's got a big head for it too. Way I can't blame him, but I don't know. I think I'd be grateful that I'm working again. I can buy a new house. I can buy a new car, a boat, because before Disney bought Lucasfilm, this guy was not going to be getting the bucks he's getting now. But
he had second billing in The Force Awakens in a non-speaking role.
Was he really? Was he second billing?
He was second. It was the the first time that he and Harrison Ford were in a Star Wars film together, so it was the fourth time that Mark Hamill had second billing to Harrison Ford, but he was still second. It was Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill. And he actually, under the AFTRA or the Actors Guild, he didn't even have to be credited in the film because he did not have a speaking role. Mm-hmm. And he had second billing and made tens of millions of dollars for being handed a lightsaber. And just, he has trashed The Last Jedi and Rian Johnson. I don't understand why he is doing this outside of the fact that he is trying to somewhat stay relevant and being in what will be undoubtedly the top grossing film of 2017, that's not enough. It's as though he has to have his voice heard even more, and that I don't get.
What is he? Is he in his 60s or early 70s?
I think he's in his late 50s, maybe. Wow. I did, because I believe, well, he might be 60 at this point. He's actually, I'm sorry, he's 66. I just looked it up. He is 66. So he's a bit older than I thought that he was, but, so he's in his mid-60s.
Can you imagine what he's going to be like when he's in his 80s?
No, I really can't. Because if you think about it, Harrison Ford is almost 10 years older than him, and while Harrison Ford will do some, I guess, some unconventional things, you typically don't hear sort of nutty, zany things about Harrison Ford that you do Mark Hamill. And I just wonder if that's because Harrison Ford has just had this storied film career where he's always been relevant.
Well, he's definitely a lot shyer, too.
Sure, yes.
I met Harrison Ford like years ago, and I could tell he definitely is not used to talking to the public. And even in interviews, if you see him, he just seems kind of uncomfortable. But it's kind of crazy. And this is even crazier, and I don't know if you heard this story, that he recently was interviewed with Entertainment Weekly, and he went on to say that he had some scenarios that he had written about Luke Skywalker, and he presented them to Rian Johnson. So this is what he has to say. He says, "I wrote lots and lots of scenarios. I made notes that he fell in love with a woman who was a widow, and they had a young child. He left the Jedi to raise the young child and marry this woman, and the child one day got a hold of the lightsaber and accidentally killed himself." So he goes on to say, he goes, "I sort of tested out some of my ideas to make sure I wasn't in conflict with anything with Rian Johnson, and he was really nurturing me with this regard. But he felt that it was important for him to tell his story because of all the issues that this world has seen with gun control. He wanted that to be sort of the lesson that they took away from it, you know, and bring that into the Star Wars universe."
I'm not sure exactly where to start or how to navigate through waters like this. I tend to think that one of the things that became sort of off-putting about the prequel trilogy was that it felt as though at times that George Lucas was sort of inserting his sort of political ideology into the films. And that was off-putting to a lot of fans. I remember especially in episode 3 where the Empire is really sort of formed, and it was sort of given – it was sort of said to be an analogy to President Bush talking about you're either with us or against us. And a lot of people I remember saying and reading that George Lucas was inserting his political ideology into that trilogy. And I feel that that's a very dangerous path to go down, not because I agree or disagree with the sentiment, but you're trying to cast as wide a net as yeah. you possibly can onto a fan base. And so when you do that, you are offending 50% of your movie-going public by trying to insert that agenda, especially when you've now had seven films built on one side trying to destroy the other side with blasters and lightsabers.
Yeah, and we try not to get political on the show.
Sure.
But yeah, I think the problem that a lot of people have with celebrities is that they're telling us how to think, like they know better than we do because of the position that they are in. And it doesn't seem to work. I don't understand why they don't see that. Over and over again, they feel they need to preach to us and how to live, but they don't live in our world. They live in their own fantasy world, and that's a big problem. And I guess that's what Hamill is just – I think he feels that he's this – he has an important role in life since he is Luke Skywalker, and he needs to use that as almost like a podium to basically make people better, or the way he thinks people should be better.
Well, and for me, I think about it as if a person, if Mark Hamill, the person, wants to have an effect on gun policies, weapons policies, if he believes that there are things within our educational system that need to be changed, altered, improved. I understand that. And as a person, Mark Hamill, or any citizen, any person in our country should do what they can to lobby for that. They should march. They should rally anything that they want in their life. But I feel that in the context of a film, a movie set, in that story, I feel that that's sort of – it's blurring the line between reality and fiction. We do not watch Star Wars films because we're hoping that someday we'll be able to get on a galactic spaceship and go to a far-off galaxy. We – see these films as a form of escape, as a form of fantasy, as a form of fiction, something that we've loved many people for 40 years now. And people it's a generational sort of thing. People generation after generation love these films, and they don't love these films because it sends a political message. They love these films because great stories have been told. And I think when you start to mix a political message in there, you're no longer telling a great story. It's sort of a form of – I hate to use the word indoctrination, but that's almost what it feels like. Mm. It's no different than it's almost like a commercial for your personal beliefs. It's like telling someone, watch MSNBC. No, watch Fox. No, watch this. I feel that that's sort of what is being said, or sort of being – you're trying to persuade somebody. And I don't think that's the persuasion that you should be trying to elicit from a moviegoer.
Yeah, like Kurt Russell, he's not very political at all. I mean, you don't know where he stands on things. And he said specifically, the reason why I'm like that is because my job is to act and entertain people. It's not to tell them how to think. You know, he says, I can't stand when I see celebrities going out there and saying you need to vote for this person or whatever. He goes, I just want people to like me and I want them to have a good time and all that. I just don't think it's my job to tell people how to think.
Another actor who is very similar to Kurt Russell has sort of said what his political leanings are, but you would never know it to see what he does philanthropically, is Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr., he said, since from the time that he spent in prison, is a conservative. But if you follow him on social media, on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, most everything that he does are wonderful cartoons of the Avengers, or he is raising money for just all sorts of different charities. And that's what he spends his time doing when he's not making films. But if you did not sort of read interviews that he's given or listen to interviews that he's given, you would have no idea of what his political leanings are. You just see this person that on average is making between $50 and $100 million yeah. per film. And all he's trying to do is, when he's not doing that, he's performing work for charity. Now, it's a lot easier when you are tasked with making a film and you say to the Disney company, I need you to move my home and all of the things inside my home to Atlanta for the next 4 months. And the Disney company says, sure, we'll do that. It makes it a lot easier. But Robert Downey Jr., very similar to a Kurt Russell, doesn't push an agenda on someone. Here, this is what charity I would like you to donate to. If you can, go ahead. And you know what? If you donate to this charity, there's a really good chance that you're going to be that a person's going to be picked to be on the Avengers set with me. And that's the sort of stuff that he does. And I appreciate that, even if I don't agree with his political ideology one way or the other. I think that is an appropriate way. That is a celebrity using their celebrity for good and not sort of to push an agenda.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you shared that with us too, because I had no idea about that. Find that really interesting, and I definitely look up to him now after hearing about that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he is. He's actually it's sort of a wonderful sort of thing to watch him on social media, and he's a lot of Robert Downey Jr. is a lot of fun to follow on social media, but it's for nothing other than he it's always posting something just tremendous about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, cartoons, things like that. But every once in a while, he actually went to a hospital, probably right around the time of Age of Ultron, and brought a child a prosthetic arm.
I saw
but
that.
it was the Iron Man suit. It was the Iron Man arm with a repulsor. And you yeah. know that those are the sorts of things that he does. And to me, that is a person that uses their fame to do so much good, and I love to see that.
That yeah, that was great. I loved seeing that. I just found the quote that I was missing before. This is what Hamill said. He said, regarding that statement, he says, it's nothing to do with the story, but when I think about gun violence and you read these tragic stories of kids getting hold of their parents' guns and killing a sibling or themselves, I mean, I had to go really dark places to get where Luke needed to be for this story. I guess I know he's an actor, and he has his own views about things, but I mean, he's playing a character that in a movie called Star Wars, where people are basically battling each other in a war.
But I think it's very similar. I don't know if you remember when this is probably now more than 15 years ago, there was the television series Charlie's Angels was made into a feature film. And one of the stars of the film, Drew Barrymore, because she is a person that is totally against guns and firearms, the Charlie's Angels characters did not use any weapons in the film. Now, the Charlie's Angels television series is 40 years old, and my understanding of the television series was these were three women that were sort of detectives or something like that, but they all carried guns, and their pose, their silhouettes for the television, for the introduction of the television show every week, was the three of them standing there holding guns in like their three individual poses. But now the three characters were not to use guns because one of the stars felt that was the wrong message to send. To me, that's okay. Then don't call the film Charlie's Angels. Call it Three Women Do Battle Without Weapons. That's I have no problem with that. But you can't, again, like you said, you can't have this film called Star Wars and everybody's playing nice or everyone figures out a way to diplomatically resolve their differences.
And also, I know, like, in Revenge of the Sith, the younglings were murdered horribly by Anakin. But we don't want to see Luke's son go into his father's toolbox, pull out a lightsaber, and chop his head off. You know, I mean, there's no positive spin on that at all. I mean, for people watching that movie.
There's not, but there's creative license that was used in Revenge of the Sith. It is our interpretation that he strikes down the younglings. I'm not saying that he doesn't. I'm not trying to say that he may not have. He absolutely did. But it is done with story and with camera angles that you would you never see that. You see his lightsaber activate. You see a child startled and jump. And then it cuts away to another scene. So you never see the violence of a child being murdered or assassinated. That is the interpretation of the scene, but it sounds almost like what Hamill wanted was for you to actually have this sort of graphic scene. And to me, that's unnecessary. The most beautiful way to tell a story is to allow the imagination to see what the story unfolds, because your imagination may vary or may be slightly different from my imagination, and both tell an equally impactful story.
Yeah. Well, elegantly said. All right, I guess we'll move on. And I guess the bottom line is, Mark, just act. That's all we want to do. We just want to see his Luke Skywalker. We don't want you holding a white flag in front of the Empire. All righty then, let's get into the main topic. And by the time you're going to hear this, Star Wars Last Jedi should be a week or even less away. What we're going to do first is kind of play the Star Wars bingo. It's just going to be me and Eric, but you guys can play along at home too. I came up with a couple of questions and scenarios. So the first one is, will the opening crawl reveal anything significant?
I don't believe so. I don't believe the opening crawl will, because if we are to understand what is going to happen, this film takes place almost immediately after the events of the Starkiller being destroyed, or actually before that. So if that's the case, I don't see where a significant event happens from the time that The Force Awakens ends until The Last Jedi begins.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say the same thing, because I just don't think that any of these crawls ever reveal anything significant. Maybe the first one, episode 4, A New Hope, I mean, kind of let you know what was going on, but...
If you think about it, really, the most significant event, I think, to happen during a crawl is actually in episode 7, because you find out that Luke has gone into exile for all of these years, but you really don't even know how long he's gone into exile. The crawls, really, it gives a short summary as to what happened in between the films, from the last film to the next film. From 4 to 5, it was a dark time for the Rebel Alliance, and they're on a snow planet. And then from Empire to Jedi, well, Han Solo is still frozen in carbonite, and that's it. So really, there have not been any major events that have happened, simply because you want to see the characters almost as they were when you last saw them. So I think it's difficult to have a significant event happen in between.
Yeah. All right, so next one. Who will be the first character that we see that we know?
I think it will be Kylo Ren. I think he will be usually the film start with either the dark side or with the Empire, with the First Order. So I believe that the first character that we're going to see will be Kylo Ren.
Yeah, I was going to say Leia, but I think you're right in that regards, that it's usually like the dark side or the Empire or the First Order. but I'm going to say Hux.
That was my second guess. That really was. That was who I thought maybe after Kylo Ren would have been Hux.
Yeah. So we'll see. But you said Kylo, so I say Hux.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Will Luke be happy to see Rey?
No.
Yeah.
No.
That's an easy one. I'm going to say no on that one too. Will someone lose a limb?
Yes. It's the rule of two.
Yeah, and somebody almost lost a limb in The Force Awakens, but they deleted that scene.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm going to say yes. Someone's got to lose something. Will Porgs be eaten?
No. I don't think so.
I'm going to say yes, because Luke's got to survive on something. But he might be a vegetarian. Who knows?
Well, of course... He's concerned with wampum hair being...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
With the wampa's hair being singed. So, yes, he has to be a vegetarian.
Will we see an unmasked General Phasma?
No, I don't think so. I do not think we will.
I think we will.
If we do, it's not going to be Gwendolyn Christie.
Will the caretakers of Act 2 be in the film? You know who they are?
I do. No, they will not.
Yeah, those are... We didn't see them in the trailers. I thought originally we might have saw them in the teasers, but they're these freaky-looking things that just don't feel like they belong on that island. They look like they're nurses or nuns, but like
yes.
They're like aliens, like with big heads, and I just think they're going to cut that whole scene out. So we both agree on that one.
Yes.
Who will have more screen time? R2-D2, C-3PO, BB-8... or Maz Kanata?
BB-8. I think Maz Kanata will be... that her screen time will be similar to The Force Awakens, where she will be in one sort of segment. It's a few scenes. I think that C-3PO and R2 might be in a little more, maybe a few more scenes. Anthony Daniels will tell you they will be the most important scenes of the film. But I think this generation's R2-D2, this trilogy's R2-D2 is BB-8. And BB-8 was so not what I expected him to be in The Force Awakens. And so I really expect that we will see a lot of BB-8 in this film.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, for me, it's between BB-8 and R2. I'm going to say R2 because he's on Act 2. Definitely not C-3PO, because I guess he's with Leia. I think we're going to see very little of him. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit more of R2, and he'll be excited to see Luke when he finally sees him. He'll be in the scene when they're, I guess, on Crait. Yeah, it's tough. I could see BB-8 taking this one, though. Will we like this Chewbacca since it's no longer Peter Mayhew?
I don't think we'll be able to tell the difference, so yes, I think we will.
I am going to say no, because I kind of can notice scenes when it's not Peter Mayhew in The Force Awakens, and he's totally not going to be in this one. So I think it's going to be noticeable that it's not the same Chewie. But I'm wishing him the best of luck. I think it's neat, like a college basketball player or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, good for him.
Absolutely.
Will there be a memorial service for Han?
Yes. I think that if the film does not open up with a funeral, it will be very shortly after the opening or the beginning of the film. But I think there absolutely will be a funeral for Han.
I'm going to say no. Yeah, I don't know. I just think that they'll mention him, but I don't know if there'll be an actual funeral memorial service. I'm going to just say no. Will we like Laura Dern's performance of her character of Vice Admiral Holdo?
Laura Dern is the type of actor that sometimes can be grating as a character, and sometimes is sort of designed to be that way as a character, and is very charming, I think. I tend to think that we will enjoy her performance just because I don't think that any of these characters are going to sort of be over the top or annoying, or if you're intended to like the character, good or evil, I think that you're going to enjoy the performance. So I say yes, we'll enjoy her performance.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. We don't know if she's good or she's bad. I mean, she is working for the Resistance, but she could be a real pain in the... to the Resistance, too. But it's more, are we going to like the character? I mean, we love characters that we love to hate, but, you know, we also like heroes, too. I'm going to say yes, I think we're going to like her. I think she's going to put in a good performance, and hopefully she'll be a classic new Star Wars character. Will we like Benicio Del Toro's performance of his character of DJ?
Oh, that's a little more difficult because I'm still sort of seeing him as the collector, and I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say no too, because I have a feeling he's not going to be in it that much, and I don't know. You said, like, he reminds you of the collector and all that stuff. He's a little too familiar for me, too. So I'm going to go with a no. Will we like Kelly Marie Tran's performance of Rose?
Yes, I believe so. I think so. I think that we're going to see her story is going to really develop because she's going to be with Finn. Mm. And I think that automatically... that gives her a level of gravitas just because she's going to be with, in these three films, Finn is one of the three main characters. So I think that she, while it's not going to be the same as Luke training with Yoda in Empire, she, I believe, is going to be one of those central, secondary characters in the film. And I think that we'll enjoy her performance very much.
I'm going to say no. Part of the reason is we haven't seen anything of her. She hasn't been in any of the trailers, I think.
Am I right? No, I have not seen anything, I don't believe.
Yeah, I just think she's going to be a throwaway character. Hope I'm wrong, but we'll see. All right, will we learn about who Rey's parents are?
Yes. I believe at the end of the film we will know who... In the last 15 minutes of the film, by that point we will know who her parents are.
Yeah, I originally was going to say no, but I'm going to say yes because, like you said, I think they've been teasing us with that for a while. It might not be as big of a deal as we think. I think it's going to be revealed that she does have parents, like why they left her on Jakku and all that stuff. We're going to get a little bit more of her backstory.
If she is not a Skywalker or a Kenobi, is it a disappointment just because she can't just be the child of sort of some unknown rebellion member from the original trilogy?
It's funny you mention that, because my next question is, will Rey be a Skywalker?
No.
I'm
going to say no.
I am going to say yes. Just to be different. Will Rey be a Kenobi?
Yes. Yes, she will. And all of this time, we've thought that the entire Star Wars saga was about the Skywalkers, and it's actually about the Kenobis.
You think so?
I would love that. I think that would just be... I mean, it would just be, to me, something different, because so much time is spent on the Skywalker family, but Obi-Wan has... always been as central a part of that story as Anakin or Luke. So I think there is a part of me that would love that she's a Kenobi. Now, do you split the difference if it's found out that Obi-Wan had a daughter and Luke married her and she's the daughter of Luke and Obi-Wan Kenobi's daughter?
Yeah, you got a little of column A, a little column B there.
Okay.
So other than a Skywalker and a Kenobi, will Rey be related to someone known in the Star Wars saga? Well, the people out there.
Unless she's Wedge Antilles' granddaughter, I don't know.
Yeah, it's pushing it.
Yeah. Who else do we know from the original trilogy?
I'm afraid to say... should I say this name? I'm going to say it. What about Palpatine?
There's a part of me that has wondered if that isn't possible. That is the one in the one scenario. That is the one scenario where if she's not a Skywalker and not a Kenobi, I would not be disappointed.
Okay.
Because that would be one of those holy cow moments. That really would.
Yep. Man, we won't get too ahead of ourselves on that one because we don't want to scare people. We really don't know the story of this. Like,
no.
We're all guessing. That's why, I mean, that's what's great about this, too. They've kept it hidden so well. And that's another thing, too. I mean, I'm considering going in dark because I don't know anything, and it's less than 2 weeks away right now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to go in dark, or if you find out, I think that it's the premiere is Saturday the 9th.
And we so get- I'm not going to read. So at that point, I think, you know, you and I have read and discussed all sorts of potential spoilers, but nothing concrete because we really don't know. But as of the premiere, there can be confirmed spoilers at that point, and I probably will not read anything beyond that. I was a little disappointed. We had tickets for the preview on Thursday, and it just so happens that is my son's winter band concert. So we exchanged them for Friday for the 15th. So we'll see it next Friday. But at the same time, after the potential spoilers, once the premiere happens, I'm probably just going to go in and just watch the film just so that I can see it and enjoy it. While I love speaking about the spoilers, I won't be disappointed if I don't know anything and just go in and see it.
Are you gonna read the text I send you?
As long as you give me the spoiler warning, just so that I know if I want to read, I can. If I don't want to, I don't have to.
All right. But it's gonna suck because I know that I'm gonna wanna talk about it. But I know that Jack is seeing it that night, so I'll be able to talk to Jack. I don't know. I'll talk to somebody. He better pick up that damn phone. I swear. I'm going to go nuts. That's what's going to drive me crazy, is I'm going to want to talk about it, and I'm going to have nobody to talk to. Ugh. All right, back to the questions. Will we find out who Snoke is?
No. Not in this film, no.
I am going to say yes, we will. Will Snoke be someone we have seen before in the Star Wars saga?
No.
Yeah, that. I guess you got to answer that.
Yeah, I don't, right, because if you think it is, who is it? And I don't think it is.
I'm going to say yes, but it's just wishful thinking on my part. I'll just leave it at that. Will we see the Force ghosts of Yoda?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes on that one. Why wouldn't they? You know, it's
absolutely.
Like, it's crazy. Will we see the Force ghosts of Obi-Wan?
Yes. Ewan McGregor. Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes, too. Will we see the Force ghost of Anakin?
Yes.
I'm going to say that, too.
Yes. Hayden Christensen, yes.
All, both of us are saying yes. Let's hope it happens. I think that would be so damn cool.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Oh. Will we see Darth Vader in a Force flashback?
I think it's possible, and I think that may be somewhat of the Force ghost of Anakin that you see is sort of maybe in the afterlife he's struggling, and there's a bit of sort of struggle back and forth of Anakin and Darth Vader. So I think that you will, whether it's a Force ghost or a Force flashback, I believe that you will.
Yeah, I think we're going to see him not the way that, you know, you kind of described it. I think, you know, just possibly maybe even just seeing Vader in his costume, you know, commanding troops or something like that, or using his lightsaber against Luke. But I think we're going to see him in some form. Will Luke be good or bad at the end of the film?
If I say dead, does that...
I'll get into that one.
Oh, okay.
Let's say, like, if he did good things in the film and he died, he's good. If he did bad things in the film and he died, he's bad.
I think that in my mind, I'm wondering if he in some way turns, but then turns back. So I'm going to say at the end of the movie, he will be good.
Again, wishful thinking on my part. You know, yeah, if I had to think with my head, I would say he's going to be good at the end. Yeah, if I'm thinking with my heart, I'm going to say bad, because I really want to see an evil Luke Skywalker, but I don't really think that's going to happen. All right, Rey. Is Rey going to be good or bad at the end?
Good.
Yeah, I guess she's going to be good. But she could be either one. That's the whole thing. It's really a 50-50 chance.
Sure.
Will Kylo Ren be good or bad at the end?
I think he's going to be good at the end.
Yeah, me too. What color lightsaber blade will Luke have by the end of the movie?
Red.
I am going to say red. I would think it could be green. I mean, at some point I think he's going to hold his own lightsaber and ignite it. But
yes.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got his lightsaber from Return of the Jedi. So that's probably going to make an appearance at some point. You know, we're not going to see a scene where Rey is using the lightsaber and they're fighting either the First Order or the Knights of Ren. And Luke's going to say, throw me that lightsaber. They're both going to have one, you know?
Yes.
And it could be a different color, too. I think they even hinted recently that there might be a new color introduced in it. So who knows? I mean, we're all kind of seeing that Luke is pushing this whole gray Jedi thing, or Rian Johnson is kind of pushing it, where we see him on the good side poster and we see him on the dark side poster. So maybe he's got a different color lightsaber altogether. You know, a mixture. Red and blue is purple. I don't want to see purple. It's not going to be purple.
No.
Already seen that, and that was dumb. But no, it could be black. You know, there are black lightsabers, but I think that means something. I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be blue. Will Rey and Kylo be a couple?
No.
I'm going to say yes. Will Finn and Rose be a couple?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes on that one, too. Will the Resistance or the First Order win the Battle of Crait?
The First Order.
I'm going to say the Resistance. Will Kylo Ren kill his mother, Leia?
No.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I think that's a big tease.
Yes, absolutely.
Will Leia die in this movie?
Yes, but we won't know it at the end of the film.
Say no. Will Luke die?
Yes.
Gonna say no. Rey die?
No.
Yeah, no. Will Finn die?
No.
No. No. Will Poe die?
No.
Yeah, Poe won't die. Will Rose die?
No.
Yes, she'll die.
Oh.
I think she's gonna die. Will General Phasma die?
No.
I'm gonna say yes, she will die. Who will be the most powerful Force user at the end of the movie?
Snoke.
You know, it's funny. I was gonna say Rey, and I was thinking of the trailer, and he was kind of manhandling her very easily. So I'm gonna say Luke instead of Snoke, though. Who will have the most shocking reveal in the movie?
I'm going to say Kylo Ren.
I am going to say Rey. It's the final one. Will it end on a cliffhanger?
Yes.
And I'm going to say yes, too, on that one. So we got a lot of similar answers, but we got a lot of different ones, too. So I think we'll definitely go through them. I'll go through them, and I'll let you know who won out of the two of us. But it's definitely a toss-up. I mean, I have no damn idea how this is going to go. And it's kind of exciting about it. But I can't promise you I'm going to say dark.
I can't promise it either. And most of my answers are based specifically on things that we've talked about that are potential spoilers. And I guess sort of what I want to see happen or what I think may happen. But it's not anything that I know. And I will be surprised if we both stay completely dark.
Yeah, and again, I just think it's amazing that we really don't know anything. I mean, we have no concrete evidence like we did with The Force Awakens, which I think everybody knew by August that Han was going to die. And this one, you don't know anything.
No.
It's just fascinating that they were able to keep it. Even the trailers. It's like the trailers are very similar. But yeah, like, so what I'm saying, TV spots really haven't revealed much. I mean, we're getting, I think mostly we're just seeing some stupid Porg stuff going on.
Yes.
Every now and then. But so far, they've just like, all right, Luke and Rey are on Act 2. They're kind of training there. We don't know how it's going to work out between the two of them. Kylo Ren may or may not shoot down his mother's ship. And there's a battle on Crait. And that's all we know. You know? Which I think is pretty amazing. I think that's going to be... I don't know. I want to say that I'm going to go dark, but I may be tempted to by the dark side, which I'm very easy. I guess, again, this is going to be our last show before we do the roundtable for Star Wars The Last Jedi. So I guess the only question I'm going to ask you, Eric, is what do you want to see and what do you not want to see happen in this movie?
I want to see the continuation of the story of Rey. I want to find out who her parents are. I don't want to see Luke whine. Don't want to see Kylo Ren with just sort of some of the tantrums that we saw in The Force Awakens. One of the things about the dark side is supposed to be sort of your controlled anger and sort of focused anger, and that we didn't see with Kylo Ren. We sort of saw him just tantruming, and that feels 2 years later like sort of a departure from what we had ever seen from a Sith or from a user of the Force on the dark side. So those are things that I guess I would like to see and then not see in the film. I would like to not see Leia die in this film, but ultimately we have to see it at some point. And so at one point I thought that Luke would die in this film and then possibly Leia in episode 9. And now I think that may be reversed simply because of the actual circumstances of life.
Yeah, me, again, I'm thinking with my heart, not my head, because my head is completely opposite. I want to see Luke be dark. I want to see him be the villain at the end of this movie. But in all honesty, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Disney would ever do something like that. It's just too risky. And I think they're going to be afraid that they're going to lose fans with something like that. Although I so wish that's going to happen. That the very end, the very last scene, we see him ignite that red lightsaber. And he was behind everything. Although, like I said, it's not going to happen. But that's what I want to see. I want to see Force Ghosts. I want to see Hayden Christensen, Anakin, make an appearance so that he can redeem himself. And I think he will, if that's the case. I want to see good acting. I do want to see Kylo Ren and Rey get together, if they're not related. And but I don't want to see any mushy kind of stuff on Naboo crap. I don't think they're going to have time for it, but I don't want to see them swimming together and talking about sand and all this other garbage. Oh, no, they weren't swimming. They were, like, frolicking in the field and riding on CGI beasts, you know?
Yeah.
But I want it to be dark. You know, my favorite is The Empire Strikes Back, and that was always the darkest out of all the movies. And I guess I liked Revenge of the Sith, too, because it was dark. And I just want to walk away from that movie the same way I walked away from The Empire Strikes Back, where something is revealed that just blows my mind, that my mouth just drops in the theater. Again, like I think, like what Eric and I have said, we've kind of read some potential spoilers, but most of them, if not all of them, are not true. I would love to be surprised where something that neither one of us even thought happens in this movie, and that would be just great. That'd be great.
It really would.
All right, so I'm hoping that everybody goes and sees this movie on opening night or Friday night, like poor Eric.
I may sneak into a late show and then see it for a second time on Friday.
Well, that's the whole thing. Is like, I remember The Force Awakens. They were actually showing them like 24 hours straight. Like the first night you can go at like at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be I got to write the review too. Because I know I'm going to want to see it back to back. I'm definitely going to go see it again on Friday. Or maybe Saturday or something like that. But I'm really excited about it. Even if it sucks, I'm still going to go see it. Probably at least 5 times in the theaters. Oh, this was a question I was going to ask. So what do you think? You think it's going to top The Force Awakens the weekend?
Box office?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think by a bit. I think the box office for The Force Awakens, especially that first night, I mean, it was some crazy, ridiculous amount. And I wouldn't be surprised. The opening weekend, it was like at 245. It actually made it. It made more than its budget, like the cost of the film. It made more than that in its opening weekend. So if you're looking, I would say I would not be surprised if its opening weekend, it does close to $275 million.
Yeah, you see, now, like, I'm kind of torn on this because, again, I remember when The Force Awakens came out. It was bedlam. I mean, just getting in the theater that night. It was crazy. I hadn't seen anything like that since the 70s, which used to happen all the time. I mean, with Star Wars, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this time around that less people are going to see it, but I don't know how the money factor works. And, I mean, tickets are more expensive, so it could take.
There are more options. It's just the gross earnings, because if it's amortized, even at like $250 million, The Force Awakens doesn't mean that was, say, more tickets than were sold for maybe The Wizard of Oz in 1939. Mm. It's just if you try to compare the apples to apples, it may have made more money, but that doesn't mean that more eyeballs saw it. And so even though tickets are more expensive now, I don't know that they're appreciably more expensive now than they were 2 years ago. It's different than even Episode 6, of course, because that's more than 30 years. But I think that because the last film came out just 2 years ago, I don't think that it's going to be such a big difference in how many or what the money is because of a price increase or, say, more IMAX, more 3D, things like that. I think it's going to be pretty close.
Well, you know, it's weird. I was talking to Jack, and you know, his son wanted to see it opening night, and I guess he kind of waited a little bit before he got the tickets. And the only tickets he could get were the $30 tickets.
Oof.
$30 each.
Oh.
So it's him, his wife, and his son. I mean,
$100.
I didn't know that. I don't think they had $30 tickets back then, you know, for The Force Awakens.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I really don't remember seeing that.
But he gets a collectible popcorn bucket out of the deal. Okay. So. But yeah, no, ticket prices have definitely gotten more expensive. I still think that it's going to make less money than The Force Awakens. Now, it depends on the reviews and the word of mouth. It's going to be huge on this one. I think that some people were disappointed in The Force Awakens. They felt that it was a retelling of A New Hope, and they didn't want that. And, you know, people like you and I, that's what we wanted. We didn't want to see the prequels or something bizarre that was going to just turn us off again. We wanted that old feeling, and it delivered, and it wasn't an exact replica of the first one. You know, they kind of pulled on our heartstrings and made us remember some stuff. But there are those people that really did not like it, and it's possible that those people aren't going to come back for the second one. And there are people that haven't even seen The Force Awakens. I know it sounds insane.
Sure.
And also, you know, look at Justice League. I mean, we all thought that was going to make a ton of money, and that made less than $100 million the opening weekend.
Yes.
It's a different animal. I think that not everybody was dying to go and see Justice League, wondering if Superman was going to come back from the dead. I think they kind of knew that was going to
happen. Sure.
This thing is going to be a different story. There's a big mystery behind this whole thing, and I think that might create anticipation of people wanting to see it, like, that weekend. But again, if this movie gets bad reviews, I think that'll affect the box office. Because people now are like, well, tickets are expensive. I'll just wait for it to be on, I'm not going to say Netflix, because it will never be on Netflix. You know, they can rent it on demand or something like that, instead of having to deal with the crowd and all that stuff. So my opinion is, I think it's going to make less than The Force Awakens. And I think the reviews are going to be mixed. But I mean, I
hope you're wrong.
I hope so too, but I just, critics are very hard to please.
Sure.
And this sounds like it's going to be radically different from anything that we'd seen before.
My hope is that it carries some of the, it maybe carries similar notes to Empire, but is enough of a departure that it is well received, because one of the things that I absolutely loved about The Force Awakens was that it went back to what made the original trilogy, feel special, and everything that the prequel trilogy didn't. There was grit, everything wasn't CGI. There were some real props, there were real locations. Everything wasn't a green screen. Everything wasn't symmetrical. And I love that. And I'm hoping that you see some of that. One of the things that concerned me were are they dogs?
The wolves?
The wolves, excuse me. They look, and again, could be just because it's a preview, look incredibly animated CGI. And so that is concerning. Seeing something like that just looks concerning to me. I'd rather see something almost look puppet-like as opposed to just pure animation.
There's definitely a lot of things. When you think about it, there could be a lot of things that can concern you. The porgs could be the new
Ewoks. That was, I saw that, and you know, Chewbacca growls, and then the poor growls to egg. Yes, very much so. But that was a concern I had about BB-8, and I was so happily surprised that BB-8 was not what I thought he was going to be. So, in that aspect, that I guess that gives me some hope.
Well, what gives me hope with these two is that they don't talk. I don't think they talk. You know, I think if they talked, I'd be a little more worried.
Yes.
But they just seem like animals, and they might come off as cute. That's about it. But hopefully they won't be annoying. But the thing I think I'm most worried about, to be honest with you, is Canto Bight, the casino.
Yes.
It looks too earthly. Casino, crap games, blackjack, tuxedos. I don't know. I'm just worried about that whole thing. But hopefully, you know, I'm wrong with that. I guess I am a little nervous. I want it to be great. I want to be surprised. I want to be excited. And I want to hopefully go and see it again. I want that feeling where it's like, I got to go see this again.
Yes.
You know? So I guess we should end it now. And let's just hope that this is an awesome movie and that we're all going to enjoy it. We're definitely going to have something to talk about, though. That's for sure.
Good or bad.
All right, so let's wrap this one up. And Eric, it's just you. Where could people find you?
You can find me on Facebook or Twitter at Eric Lancey. Send me a friend request. Follow me or email me at eric@wdwnt.com.
Yeah, and you can find me on Facebook too. I hate to say it, but I've gone dark on Facebook lately. But yeah, I'll definitely take your friend request if you send it. But you can also email me at joe@wdwnt.com, and love to hear from you guys and any questions you have. So with that, this will be the end of episode number 16 of season 3 of WDWNT Nerd Alert. And until next time, see ya.
Stay nerdy.